Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The BBC recently ran a documentary called America's Child Death Shame. It found that every 6 hours, a child dies from abuse or neglect in the United States. The latest government figures show an estimated 1,770 children were killed as a result of maltreatment in 2009. A recent congressional report concludes that the real number could be nearer 2,500. In fact, says the documentary, America has the worst child abuse record in the industrialized world. In a recent Guardian piece, one of today's guests, Dr. Seema Jalani, writes, quote, America's child maltreatment death rate is triple Canada's and 11 times that of Italy. Over the past decade, more than 20,000 American children have been killed by their own family members. That is nearly four times the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. So what explains these disturbing statistics? What will it take to have an honest conversation about this issue, and what can be done to stop the cycle of violence against children? Dr. Seema Jalani is a pediatric specialist in the critical care unit at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston. She also serves as a physician on medical evacuation flights for critically ill children. She's worked in a number of countries, including Sudan, Lebanon, Egypt, Afghanistan, and Palestine. Her radio documentary, Israel and Palestine, The Human Cost of the Occupation, was nominated for the prestigious Peabody Award. And her article, America's Child Abuse Epidemic, is at yourcallradio.org. And Dr. Jalani joins us from Houston. Hi, Dr. Jalani. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for addressing this extremely important topic that I am so thrilled that you've decided to take on your show today.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're also joined today by Robin Roberts. She works with Marin Advocates for Children. That's a nonprofit that gives a voice to victims of child abuse and neglect. They also work to prevent abuse. Hi, Robin. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And Michael Petit is president of Every Child Matters Education Fund. That's a nonprofit working to make children, youth, and families a national political priority. They release a yearly report called We Can Do Better, Child Abuse and Neglect Deaths in America. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So, Dr. Jalani, I know you have to leave us in just under 20 minutes. So let's dive right in. These statistics are incredibly disturbing, to say the least. First off, why don't you talk about what we're facing here?
It's great tragedy and, frankly, devastation in the face of millions or hundreds of thousands of children in the next several years. And those statistics that you mentioned are quite staggering. And the question we must ask ourselves is, why? Why is an industrialized, one of the most prosperous and certainly one of the most wealthy countries in the world, why is this the future that we are offering to our children? And as you said, more than 20,000 American children have been killed by their guardians or caretakers. So what faces us is a continuing cycle. We know that children that were raised in homes of abuse or neglect are over 70 times more likely to continue that cycle of abuse or neglect or maltreatment. So what's facing us in the future is a rather devastating cycle that we need to be very aware of and much more proactive than we have been.
And why is this happening? I mean, you deal with these children and their families on a regular basis. Some of the examples that you write about in your Guardian piece are really hard to read. I mean, this issue does not get much attention. It's interesting to me that this piece came out in the Guardian and the BBC had a documentary on this in the past couple of months. And later in the show, we'll talk about, you know, the American media and what this looks like there. But what do you see on a regular basis in your practice?
Oh, gosh. Quite tragic situations. And some of the examples I've mentioned are, well, the most famous example that was also covered by the BBC is the case of a young girl, 4-year-old, by the name of Emma Thompson, who was seen at an emergency room, noted to have herpes, reported that was reported at appropriately to CPS, and CPS was investigating her. And approximately a few weeks later, she turned up in the ER, essentially dead on arrival, over 80 bruises over her body, anal tears, vaginal tears, indicative of sexual abuse and rape. and also multiple contusions over her brain. And this is just a very tragic situation. I've seen cases like that. And keep in mind, that was under investigation by CPS. And over half of children, over half the children who are, end up killed by their caretakers were undergoing investigations by CPS. So we need to kind of ask ourselves what's going on, because this had been flagged. There were several red flags, and these are not isolated cases. That's one example. I mean, you know, multiple examples of children being dipped in hot oil, the sexual abuse, forced to perform various sexual acts, and it's just horrifying when you think of a 3, 4, 5, up to, you know, a 15-year-old being forced to do any of these things and tortured. So I won't sort of depress you with those stories. Maybe we can, I can focus a little bit on why I think that is.
Why don't you do that? And I also wanted to let listeners know, obviously, there's going to be a lot of disturbing content said and expressed on the show today. So if you have children around, they might not want to hear this, because we will play clips later in the show from the documentary. But why don't you focus on that important question? Why? Why is this happening? Why is this so pervasive in the United States?
I think personally, I think that it is multifactorial, and I am hesitant to blame one particular aspect of our society. However, we do have to look, and as you have raised the question, why, what is the difference between our country and other countries? In my opinion, this country has extremely limited social services, and even more, and that are even getting more limited by recent budget cuts and the economic recession. One of the, you know, the other industrialized countries, Canada, Italy, have therapies, have rehabilitation to stop the cycle of violence, have multiple other services that we do have, but they are underfunded. The caseload, you know, and as I said earlier regarding the CPS, that's not to point a finger of blame at CPS by any means. The caseworkers can be very overworked and be following up to 60 cases at one time. And it is a frustrating, depressing, difficult job. So I can't expect, you know, it is very difficult for us to kind of hold our fingers at them and point at them. I mean, they're definitely doing what they can. They are underfunded. For instance, just last year in Hawaii, a funding for child abuse, for one of the child abuse reduction programs, was slashed so much that after 2 years of serving 4,000 families, now it can only afford to serve 100 families. Similarly, in South Carolina, 5 state-run homes for children were closed. And so, in my opinion, the social services are currently undergoing budget cuts. And the question we need to ask ourselves as a society, as a country, is where do we want to put our funding? I mean, do we want to continue funding, and this gets a little bit more broad into politics, but how can we as a society sleep at night when we're funding 2 wars, bailing out Wall Street, and these are the programs that we're cutting, child maltreatment reduction programs and child abuse therapy? We really need to ask ourselves some hard questions about where we're going economically.
Well, you get right to the heart of the matter, because you're in Texas, and Texas has it's one of the states with the worst child abuse records. And as you write in your piece, Texas is a low-tax, low-social service state. Children in Texas are more likely to be incarcerated, 4 times more likely to be uninsured, twice as likely to drop out of high school, twice as likely to die from abuse and neglect. And what really struck me in the BBC documentary is that services that help new parents, especially young parents, are wildly successful. For example, a nurse might go to a home on a weekly basis and just answer basic questions, just be there for the frustrated parents. And these services are being slashed left and right, not only in Texas, but across the country.
I think we've seen a change in the political narrative regarding this. The conversation that revolves around social services, particularly to the right of the aisle, tends to be talking about these unknown people who are leeches off society, right, and who are taking all our, you know, money and And as you've seen, obviously, with the Occupy Wall Street movement, it becomes more and more of I call it the get a job kind of attitude. And it does, and it surely extends to children here. And if we continue that attitude, this is what we are likely to see, further children dying from child abuse and neglect. Now, I have to say, I don't think that just throwing money at a problem is the answer. It has to be, as you mentioned, services that have been proven to help, that are, you know, have good efficacy and good efficiency. But the answer is not to cut programs. We need to continue to fund programs that are not only coming in like CPS when there is a problem, but preventive methods. How do you, you know, one small example compared to industrialized countries is maternity leave and how little it is in this country compared to countries in the UK, compared to, for instance, the UK. I mean, I believe 6 weeks in this country and upwards of 6 months in several other countries, and so that they can deal with their postpartum depression and maybe postpartum psychosis. They can undergo parenting classes. These are proven to help. And as you mentioned, Texas is a very low tax, a low social service state, and that is touted as a good thing. But when you see where we are when it comes to child maltreatment and furthermore, mental health services, we are in the bottom 10, if I'm not mistaken. The repercussions of that are dire compared to a high state tax like Vermont, who actually has very good social services in place.
We're speaking with Dr. Seema Jalani. She's a pediatric specialist in the critical care unit at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston. She has been writing about child abuse for The Guardian. Her latest piece is America's Child Abuse Epidemic. 4 times more children have been killed this decade than U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, and their assailants are their families. And Dr. Jalani has to leave us in just about 5 minutes. So if you have any questions or comments for her, you can give us a call at 866-798.
This is a rebroadcast. Please, no calls.
What can we do to have an honest conversation about this issue in this country? And what can we do to prevent this abuse? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're also joined, and we'll get to our next guest in a minute. Robin Roberts is with Marin Advocates for Children, and Michael Petit is president of Every Child Matters Education Fund. So, Dr. Jalani, what can we do to have an honest, open conversation about child abuse in this country? I mean, we were having a conversation recently in our editorial meeting about what's been going on at Penn State. And while that's gotten so much attention, I mean, personally, I feel that it's sort of more political, what happens to the school, rather than really diving in and talking about why this is so pervasive in this country and what we need to do to prevent it.
Well, first of all, at Penn State, that episode is horrifying. And what is perhaps the most horrifying is that the victim stories have been lost. Mm. We've been talking about football when people's lives have been shattered and destroyed. And when you talk about having an honest conversation, we should really be talking about the horrific and nightmarish things that those children had to go through at the hands of, and I'll say it, I won't be afraid to say it, a monster in my eyes. And instead, we're talking about Joe Paterno and his illustrious football career. That's not an honest conversation. We're shoving the victim stories under the rug, and we're losing them in this battle. The heroes have become, people that to look down on, and vice versa, the monsters have become heroes in this story. This is if you want to see why we are failing our children, the Penn State episode is the prototype of why we are failing in this country for our children.
Well, what do you think the conversation needs to sound like? What do we need to focus on?
Regarding
this epidemic of child abuse, because the BBC had that documentary focused on a clinic in Houston specifically for children who are abused and raped. They said the problem is getting so bad that they're needing to expand.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I think we need to be talking about specifics, first of all, as I mentioned, funding. Second of all, when these cases do go to court, what can we as physicians, I've been educated in recent years myself due to, and your colleagues there, your speakers from Every Child Matters can really pipe in on this one, what can we as physicians and healthcare workers do to make this easier on the victims and help them win in court? And then furthermore, therapy for rehabilitation, it doesn't just stop by taking the child out of that environment. It begins, the process begins by healing and nurturing, and that's what we need to be talking about. And also, I think people are under the false understanding that child abuse is only something that happens in a certain class, in a certain race, in a certain... It is very pervasive throughout society. I will say that one of the best predictors is poverty. That's not to say that poor people abuse their children. That is not what I'm saying at all. I'd like to clarify. It's just a very high-risk situation for the child. So we need to be reaching out to that population even more to save these children.
And before we let you go, Dr. Jelani, Michael Petit, do you have any questions for Dr. Jelani or any comments?
The principal comment that I would have is that Texas represents itself as the epicenter of compassionate conservatism. And I think in this case, that's very much an oxymoron. It's a contradiction in terms. There's a political ideology that drives a lot of this in terms of keeping government out of the lives of people. But when you're a child being victimized with the people that you live with, then there is very much a need for a more community and public-oriented response and intervention. So the doctor is operating in a very, very tough state, 250 to 300 child abuse deaths a year over the term of the current governor. That's about 3,000 to 4,000 deaths in a 10 or 11-year period that has received very modest attention.
And yet they embrace the pro-family label, and the media lets them get away with it. Dr. Jelani, I haven't been watching the last, I don't know, five or so GOP debates. Do any of these issues come up in these debates? Does Governor Rick Perry, is he ever asked about this issue?
No, the last one was on national security, and the ones prior to that I did not.
We follow the issues, Rose, and no, they are not covering it. The reporters are not asking it. National press is not covering it. And so they're getting a free pass on these matters, and it's quite ironic that the story that we're really referring to is this BBC documentary that was done, had a million hits the first day it ran. The national press, our national press, didn't pick up on it at all.
And that's
been the pattern for going back the 10 years that I've been on this issue in this position.
Well, Dr. Jelani, I know we have to let you go in just 2 minutes. I know you've got an appointment, and I'm so glad you were able to join us today. What was the response? What response have you received from your reporting? And have you received many interview requests from U.S. reporters?
You know, it's interesting. I actually helped put together part of that BBC documentary, the producer, a colleague of mine, and she herself was quite shocked that nobody else had picked up on this, and why is this being... Even my articles have been published in The Guardian. I have pitched it to multiple media outlets in the United States. It's never been picked up here. What response have I gotten in the United States? Mixed. You would think that this is a sort of a non-controversial issue. It's, you know, it's for the future of children that have been severely abused and neglected. But certainly people, talk about handouts and that kind of language, which frankly is unacceptable when you're talking about a child, to me. And the broader international media, overwhelmingly a positive response to my articles, however, extreme shock, and they don't understand why and where we're going wrong. I was just going to sort of close with saying that, in my opinion, I feel like the narrative of social programs and, furthermore, of healthcare reform, because these are all intertwined issues, has to stop reflecting the agenda of morally bankrupt politicians who are really only thinking about the next election.
Right.
And likewise for the media and the journalism community. They are in such a great position to be able to shed light on this issue, and I'd like to see more of that, as Mr. Pettit mentioned. So these propagandized sort of myths about who are in need of social services have to be replaced with empathic truth. And these are catastrophically shattered children, and they are begging for our compassion. So those compassionate conservatives out there, I ask them to step up to the plate.
Well, Dr. Jelani, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for your work. We'd love to have you back in a couple of months to do a follow-up show on this.
Thank you so much for addressing it, and thanks to Mr. Pettit, who echoed many of my sentiments. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Dr. Seema Jalani. She's a pediatric specialist in the critical care unit at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston. She writes about child abuse for The Guardian of London. Her latest piece is America's Child Abuse Epidemic. Here in the U.S., every 6 hours, a child dies from abuse or neglect. And the U.S. child maltreatment death rate is triple Canada's, 11 times that of Italy. And we're joined today by Robin Roberts. She works with Marin Advocates for Children, and Michael Pettit. He's president of Every Child Matters Education Fund. And Robin, why don't you jump in here, and what is your response to what Dr. Jalani said about trying to get this issue more attention and not having a successful or having a difficult time of getting these articles published in the U.S. press?
Yeah, I wanted to emphasize that theme in the conversation because we really need to raise awareness for this issue. There isn't enough attention to the problem. People don't like to talk about it. They don't like to. It's not something that people like to hear about. People, you know, when you talk about the Penn State case, you know, think of how many people could have intervened, and no one did. We as a community really need to look out for each other and come together and speak up about this issue. As Child Abuse Prevention Council, you know, our job is to raise awareness, but, you know, not only raise awareness, but give parents, families, and community members the tools that they need to promote optimal child development and reduce child abuse. And I think, Dr. Jalani mentioned prevention. We really need to focus on prevention and what we can do to help parents.
And how pervasive is this in Marin?
So, you know, a lot of people, I think a big misconception about Marin County is it's a very wealthy county and people think that child abuse doesn't happen. And in fact, it does, and it's a very real and big problem. And it's, you know, with the economic downturn, we're seeing more and more cases of it. So it's a very real problem.
Well, let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Ruby calling from Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Rose, and thank you so much for this show. As you know, I was Ms. Nancy on Romper Room in the 1980s, and during my tenure there, I produced a series of child abuse prevention public service announcements. It was my first foray into researching and writing and producing something on that topic. I worked with 5 child abuse agencies in the Bay Area, and it took me about 2 years to get these done. And I was shocked at the statistics, and I'd like to ask your professionals who are on the show today if they still hold. And the comment about Marin County, I think, is telling. What I learned then, which I'd like to know if it's still true, 1 in 4 girls, by the time they reach the age of 18, are physically or sexually abused. 1 in 6 boys are physically or sexually abused by the time they reach the age of 18. Over 90% of the inmates on death row were physically or sexually abused, and of course were also perpetrators of that. And then lastly, I learned in the 70s when I was an educator in the public schools that if educators or medical personnel learn of any kind of abuse to a child, if a child ever speaks of it, they are required by law to report it to the authorities.
Well,
which is why I went nuts about Penn State.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Ruby. We're going to take a quick break and we'll get a response to these stats right after this. It's the end of another year and a time when you may be thinking about charitable giving to the many worthy causes and organizations that you believe in. We hope that KALW is on your list and that you consider making a tax-deductible gift at our website, kalw.org. Whether you're renewing your membership or offering us an additional gift, we thank you for your support. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. And if you've got a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about child abuse in the United States. In the U.S., a child dies from abuse or neglect every 6 hours. Over the past decade, more than 20,000 children in this country have been killed by their own family members. The U.S. has the worst child abuse record in the industrialized world. So what can we do to raise more awareness about this issue? Have an honest conversation about it. As Dr. Jelani said, there's so much attention on Penn State, but the children's stories are being lost in the conversation about what happens to the football team and the coaches and the cover-ups. So how can we talk about this in this country? How can we even begin to have a real conversation about this? What are some solutions? How can it be prevented? The guests know what the solutions are. And as they said, it's a question of political will. So what can we do to really change this entire situation? The toll-free number is 866-798.
This is a rebroadcast episode of Your Call. We cannot accept phone calls at this time.
This topic, we'd love to hear from you. And you can obviously be anonymous if you'd like. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Robin Roberts. She works with Marin Advocates for Children. That's a nonprofit that gives a voice to victims of child abuse and neglect. And Michael Pettit is president of Every Child Matters Education Fund, a nonprofit working to make children, youth, and families a national political priority. And they come out with a report every year called We Can Do Better, Child Abuse and Neglect Deaths in America. And why don't we comment on Ruby's call? Michael, Ruby wanted to know if these statistics still ring true, that 1 in 4 girls will be abused by the time they reach 18, and it's 1 in 6 boys. Is that still true?
Rose, first, it is Michael Petit, not Pettit.
I'm sorry.
You had it right the first
time.
Okay. Then it got changed. I haven't seen the latest figures on it, but those numbers have been holding true, and we think the problem may, in fact, be getting worse. There are some 3 million reports of child abuse and neglect each year in the United States. That number has held firm for a couple of decades. The number of confirmed cases are about 1 million a year, maybe 100,000 of those are sex abuse cases. The others are mostly neglect and physical abuse cases, and a couple of thousand, 3,000 or so of those cases are actual fatalities of children. Federal reports have suggested that all of these numbers may be understated by as much as two-thirds. That is, the problem may be triple what it is that we're actually seeing. And one of the big issues on all of this, and when you ask about, you know, why aren't we doing more, is while the public sees an individual case unfold, a child is harmed and it's shocking and people don't want to see it, there are confidentiality laws that are in place that need to be modified. They are shielding the public from actually what happened in these cases, whether it's enough money being spent, whether workers are trained, whether there's collaboration among the different systems that are working on these issues. The public is shielded from the dimensions of this problem. And we know from all of our polling and that we've work that we've done with the public on this, they very much do not want these children harmed. They would like to have them protected. But most people think that this is dealt with locally, when in fact there is a whole federal approach to this that's needed, as well as a stronger state approach.
And Michael, what do you think is missing from the conversation this country is having about what happened at Penn State?
Well, the fundamental issue is, why are so many of our children in at-risk situations to begin with? And if you take a look at the social safety net in the United States, it's much weaker than in the other rich democracies. We have much higher rates of out-of-wedlock teen births, teen pregnancy. We have much larger prison populations, much larger substance abuse issues, much larger poverty issues. And we know that all of those things, especially in combination, are spawning grounds for abuse and neglect, a lot of stress in the household, a lot of depression in the households. So one is, we have more people presenting more serious problems than many other cultures. And secondly, we have a very weak social safety net response to this at a federal and at a state level. And in fact, right now, the states are cutting deeply into these areas all across the country, and the federal government is on the verge of doing the same thing. And it really is a question of where do we want to channel our resources, to children or to war efforts or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
And right now, the kids are not a priority in the halls of power, whether to the state legislature or in Congress.
Well, I want to play a clip from the BBC documentary America's Child Death Shame. And again, I just want to say that some of the content we're going to air today is disturbing. So if you have children in the room, you might want to take them out of the room. So this is from a BBC documentary. This is Dr. Matt Cox. He is a pediatrician at Dallas Children's Hospital. This is one of the largest pediatric hospitals in the United States. They do everything from cancer to heart transplants. Child abuse accounts for 37% of the hospital's deaths, and Dr. Cox says the number's on the rise. He says there are days that he is still shocked.
A particular kind of scenario would be sibling sets who are chronically and severely neglected, torture-type cases where, like, three siblings locked in a bathroom for 9 to 12 months. Skin and bones, physically abused, sexually abused, tortured, long periods of time.
Dr. Matt Cox is one of the few pediatricians in the country specializing in abuse. He runs an abuse and neglect clinic and sees, on average, 5 patients a day. Diagnosing them is often difficult.
Most kids don't look like the battered baby that we think about when we talk about battered child syndrome. When we talk about battered child, we think of bruises and whip marks and burns. Most child abuse doesn't look like that. Most of the kids who are abused in the more severe forms have internal injuries with no external manifestation. So doctors have to be aware of it. Doctors have to think about it, because if we don't think about it as a physician, we'll miss the diagnosis. And that's where education and training of doctors is really important.
And that is a clip from a BBC documentary that recently aired called America's Child Death Shame. That was Dr. Matt Cox. He's a pediatrician at Dallas Children's Hospital. And Michael, it's difficult to hear the abuse explained, but Dr. Jelani writes about this also, and a number of the people in the documentary said this is something that Americans just don't want to deal with because it is so difficult to talk about.
Well, first of all, I would encourage people to go to our website, everychildmatters.org. Much of the connection to the BBC story is there, and many of the statistics that were quoted earlier are found in reports and documents that we have on that site. There is also a national coalition to end child abuse deaths that has been created that consists of our organization, the National Association of Social Workers, the National District Attorneys Association, the National Children's Alliance, and the National Children's Death Review Team that looks at all children's deaths nationally. I think the public is able and prepared to talk about this if people approach them in the proper manner, which is, this is a national phenomenon that can be confronted. We can do something about it. We know a lot of the origins in it. And the report that you cited, We Can Do Better, has a dozen or so specific recommendations on what might be done. But, you know, here's something that is also needs to be thought about. A lot of this can be prevented, but when children are at imminent risk of death, it requires more than social workers. It requires more than public health nurses. Law enforcement needs to be involved in a very small percentage of these cases, but in those cases, their role is critical. They can remove a potential perpetrator from a child. They can order people to stay away from a home. They can arrest people. They can have people prosecuted. And that is not happening enough in the most severe cases. One last thing I would just note on this thing is that there is a need for a national strategy on this. Almost half the money that goes into child abuse comes out of Washington, D.C. Much of the law comes out of Washington, D.C. There is very weak federal oversight of what's happening within the states. Some states do much better than other states. And the bottom line question is, are these kids Texas children first? Are they Vermont children first? Are they Alabama children first? Or are they American children first?
Well, we've got a number of callers, so let's hear from Lori in San Francisco. Hi, Lori. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm a survivor of child abuse. It wasn't a very typical situation. My father was psychotic, alcoholic, violent, with a gun. And in my situation, I was sort of the one who wasn't fit, but I put myself in a situation to be his confidant and, in the end, very sexually inappropriate behavior, but my comment is that, you know, I'm 47 years old, and I'm just now learning to love myself. Because when your abuser is someone who tells you that they love you, you are in a situation where you both are repulsed by love, especially with sexually inappropriate behavior by a parent. But you're also longing for it. And the guilt around needing love, and recently wrote a play called Love By You. It's a solo performance piece. And it was through writing the play and telling my story that I actually realized that I never deserved any of that, because you start to believe that there's something inherent in you that wouldn't be the reason why it all happened, even if it's sort of from a divine source. So I'm just interested in, I've been doing a lot of work personally, but on what people are doing to make an awareness of, you know, all these adult children of abuse we're all walking around.
And Lori, were you able to seek help? Do you feel like there were organizations available for you?
A pretty incredible story. I was diagnosed first with depression and then bipolar, but I'm beginning to see now it was more post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. And I've years being over-medicated. And finally, when I refused to really take the tranquilizers anymore, because there's so many horrible side effects for taking these kind of medications, I started being very angry, and all these actually some psychotic behavior came out. I mean, I was really hysterical and suicidal, and my psychiatrist said to me that claims of post-traumatic stress are greatly exaggerated. And my father held a gun to my mother's head because I talked to a boy. My father came into my bed. My father told people I was his girlfriend. Like, you know, I mean, I could go on and on with the stories of what happened to me. And he said, you know, well, it's greatly exaggerated. And it wasn't until I saw a phenomenal therapist here in the city that changed all that. But I'm talking about years of talk therapy, years of medication. You know, I was a straight-A student, beauty queen, still being suicidal for years, lost my marriage. It wasn't until in the last 2 years that I basically said, you know what, I'm worth it, and I'm going to do everything I can. And through the help of Al-Anon 12-step programs. But until then, I just figured the rest of my life was going to be me hiding underneath a table, you know, periodically, thinking someone was coming to get me.
What is your play called, and can we see it? Or
So it's called Loved By You.
Okay.
It's called Love Story. Mm-hmm. And I'm appearing at the Marsh Theater on the 5th and the 12th of December, just for 2 20-minute sort of previews. And then I will be at the Traveling Jewish Theater in January and the Brava in March. So what I could do is give an email or something, and then people could...
Yes, and Lori, we'd love to maybe have you on in January to have a follow-up conversation about this.
I have to tell you, I based it on Marilyn Monroe. I sort of did it on Marilyn Monroe because this, after being abused, what happens is you'll do anything for love and for the over-sexualization and hiding one's anger and things like that. And it's about what's really lying beneath what people are now calling love addiction.
Yeah, please, if you can email Rose at yourcallradio.org, and we'd love to be in touch and do a show about your play.
Oh, my God. And I just have to say something for anyone who's out there who's still dealing with the self-hate. I am almost glad that these male psychiatrists kept telling me I was the crazy one, because I have so much love for myself. And I just did the play for a bunch of college students, and girls came up to me crying and said, please tell me how to learn to love myself.
Wow. Well, gosh, thank you so much for calling in, Lori. And we'll definitely be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's go next to Jason in San Jose. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much. So when I lived in Arkansas and was working in therapy, I worked as a therapist with what are called the Children's Advocacy Centers. And they do a really great job of working with physically and sexually abused children, as well as the entire family system and even the abusers. And one of the things that always struck me was that I wondered what would have happened in a lot of these, especially parental abuse cases, if parenting classes were required a first-time parent. Mm-hmm. We have to have a license to drive a car in this country, to go fishing. And I would just like anybody on the panel to maybe answer the possibility of prevention rather than trying to deal with the problem after the fact, and if there's been any sort of pressure on the medical community or insurance community to try to make parenting classes required. And I'll take my response offline.
Okay, thank you so much. This was actually raised and discussed in the BBC documentary. We're going to go through a few more calls, and then we'll get responses from our guests. Let's hear from Patricia in Aptos. Hi, Patricia. Patricia, are you with us? Well, if you, Patricia, I know you had a really good question about abortion. So if you can give us a call back, we'll definitely put you back on the air. Sorry about that. Let's hear from Andre in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Rose. In the view of your incredible guest about this epidemic of abuse, what is the influence of churches concealing abuse by clergy and not being subject to law?
Yes, that's another important issue to bring to this conversation. Thank you for that, and we'll get to it in just a minute. Let's go to Ed in Berkeley. Hi, Ed.
Wow, I got to follow these incredible giants. Okay, I just have some kind of statistical stuff and then some appeals to compassion. It's a depressing statistic that I think it's something like 90, your guests would probably know, 90% of the people that abuse have been abused. And this has implications for society in that once there's a large percentage out there, we're going to have this problem for a long time.
Right.
And the second part is related to the first, and that is compassion for the abuser. Mm. This particular problem area of society really demands that we look at that issue because, you know, your rage at someone who does this horrible activity is just obviously...
Well, Ed, thank you for calling, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but your line is hard to hear, but I got the gist of your comment. Robin, in Dr. Jelani's piece and in a lot of the data, it shows that abused children are 74 times more likely to commit crimes against others and 6 times more likely to abuse their own children.
Yes. Yeah, so first I want to go back to Lori, and I want to thank her for sharing her story. And, you know, being abused, that trauma is so severe, and it's great that she's, you know, doing some really productive things with that and really working on herself. Because when you are abused as a child, you grow up thinking the world is a scary place, that you're unlovable, that adults, you can't trust people. So I really wanted to thank her for sharing her story. And then, you know, I'm looking at some statistics right now, and, you know, the outlook and the outcome is just, it's not good. You know, 14% of all men in prison in the U.S. were abused as children. 36% of all women in prison were abused as children. Children who experience child abuse and neglect are 59% more likely to be arrested as a juvenile. 28% more likely to be arrested as an adult, and 30% more likely to commit violent crime. Abused children are 25% more likely to experience teen pregnancy. I mean, you know, the 1/3 to 2/3 of child maltreatment cases involve substance use to some degree, and then, you know, children are more likely to use, to abuse. So, you know, the outlook is not good, and I like, I think, was it Lori mentioned, that we really need to focus on prevention, you know, because the cycle continues, and that is what happens, and that's what we see in Marin County, that the cycle continues. Most of the children who are removed from their homes due to abuse or neglect, their parents have been abused as children. Mm-hmm. So,
and that was Jason that talked about prevention and specifically the parenting classes.
Yeah, you know... Parenting classes, you know, forcing or mandating parents to take parenting classes, I don't know if that will ever pass in our country, or I don't know if, you know, that will ever become law. But I think, and I wanted to also go back to what I think is a big issue, is that parents are feeling isolated. Mm-hmm. We see this all the time, that families are feeling very isolated, and they don't know where to turn, especially with the economic downturn. People don't know where to turn. They don't know what resources are available to them. They don't know what supports are out there. So I think really looking at social isolation is so important. And I think that so in our county, there have been some family resource centers that have started parent cafes. So this isn't a parenting class per se, but this is a parent cafe where parents can come and be together and talk about the issues that are happening, and they're not feeling as isolated. So they're really learning from each other. And so I think that is something we can do, something like a parent cafe where parents can support one another. I think we really need to focus on the isolation.
What would you add to that, Michael?
Yeah, I think that prevention is critically important, but it's not instead of or rather than intervening in treatment right now. The annual estimated cost of child abuse in this country, the damage that it causes, is estimated to be more than $100 billion a year.
A year?
Yeah. There are thousands of people who, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who've experienced what Lori experienced. And that has long-term impact for them economically, personally, socially, substance abuse, and so forth. Look, one of the things that happens is we get in these conversations very locally about what can be done to help an individual parent. But part of this demands a national response. This is an epidemic situation across the country. Children are easily elbowed off the tables of power and money in the Congress. The nation is still a hugely wealthy country. It's not channeling its resources into this area. It has everything to do with who holds elective office, mm-hmm. what their ideologies are, and whether, look, we've done an enormous amount of good for seniors over the last 35 or 40 years with strong federal intervention in Medicare and Social Security and Section 8 housing and a whole series of things. We have not done anything comparable for children. Federal spending for seniors is seven times greater than for individual children. And that's something that needs to be changed. We should still spend on seniors, but we also need to spend on kids. And the fact is our culture simply is not kind to other people's children. We care about our own children, although many of the families that we're talking about now have a great deal of difficulty in caring for their children. But especially when it comes to other people's children, we tend to take a hands-off attitude. And that means the child is left to the whim of the adults that they're living with. And the other thing I would just note is that the likelihood of being killed in a home where there's an unrelated male is 50 to 100 times more than living in a household where a biological male is present. So, you know, this should inform how we go about conducting our business as well. And one of the things that we're recommending is that there be a national commission called to address this issue. We are introducing legislation in January. Senator Kerry is going to be taking the lead on it, and it would devote a couple of years of public forums and hearings around the country opening up this issue, putting on the table, making it safe to talk about, and then prescribing a public-private partnership nationally and locally on how to intervene on behalf of these kids, strengthen these families, and protect the children.
Oh, we have an email from a listener who says, regarding the question, why is child abuse happening? The doctor at the top of your program, that was Dr. Seema Jalani, pointed to slashed budgets of organizations and programs that help children. This answer seems to address the symptoms. Can your guest please address the root causes of this violence against children? Michael?
Well, I think in the end, you know, children need to be welcomed onto the planet. And there should be an enthusiastic reception for them. And for the kids that we're talking about, in many cases, that's not what they're experiencing. They're in very stressed out families. Many of the adults are very immature. They're not adults themselves. They have trouble meeting their own needs, much less the needs of their children. There's too much substance abuse. There's too much violent crime in some of these households. The culture is just not very good at providing the kinds of early support for young parents to avoid these kinds of things. And we know a lot about how to produce healthy human growth and development. We're simply not acting on it. You know, I've been on this issue for 40 years, and I've written a little book on this topic, and you can see it at our website, Homeland Insecurity. But I talk about if I have children to be the champions, a collective American representative, it's kids who don't can't be.
The problem happens when it's hours of debates.
National media taken a absence on this issue. The big print media, electronic media, including PBS, have not addressed this question. There is not the kind of intellectual analysis with numbers, with solutions, with et cetera. It's not being covered. And we approach them all the time. We lay these numbers out, and we end up getting BBC to cover this stuff rather than CBS, ABC, New York Times, Washington Post, NPR. They don't address the issue. I talked with one of the famous talk show hosts for NPR, and I was told this is not something that our listeners would have any interest in. So, you know, it's a real struggle for these kids. They just simply don't have the kind of representation that many other special groups do.
And Robin, we've just got a minute left. Final thoughts from you. We were not able to address the one question about the role the church plays in this. I mean, you've got the abuse, the systemic abuse
within the Catholic Church, and then you've got the Penn State scandal, and you've got these reports. It seems like these issues would get, I mean, they do get a lot of attention, but it seems like it's very much on the surface.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say, you know, closing my message is that we are all a community, and we need to look out for each other. Someone else's child is our child. If we see something, we need to report it. You know, child prevention councils, area, go on data reporter training, child abuse for child work, we want that. We need to raise awareness, and we need to step in as a community.
Well, thank you so much, Vanessa. Thanks for your work on this issue. We will definitely continue to follow this. Robin Roberts works with Advocates for Children, a nonprofit that gives a child and the help it is, but an outreach mass education fund, a nonprofit organization work make children, youth, and families, ancient political priorities, outlized abuse in state. So much.
You're welcome.
And thank you. Email information about the issue, the story, and the BBC documentary at callroad.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. Graphic novelist illuminating politics and history. On the next Your Call, we'll rebroadcast a conversation we had with Amir, author of the graphic novel Zahra's Paradise, and Paul Buell, historian and author of several graphic novels. How do images change the art of storytelling? More graphic novels have been published in the last 10 years than in the previous 30. So what explains the explosion? What makes them unique? And what can we learn from graphic journalism? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Debbie Kennedy is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.